But I think the paintings that I do will describe identity, a story, and express someone's life.
Never quit. Never quit radio.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the TNQ podcast. I'm your host, Marcus Luttrell. Every week, it's my job to fire you up, to ignite the legend inside of you, and to push you to your greatness. Join me every week as I take you into my briefing room with some of the most hard-charging people on the planet. They're going to show you how to embrace the suck of life, teach you the values of working your ass off, and charge through whatever life throws at you. This is the Team Never Quit podcast. So buckle up, Buttercup.
What's going on, ladies and gentlemen? Welcome back to another episode of the Team Never Quit podcast. As always, thank you guys for listening and watching, and please don't forget to hit that like and subscribe button wherever you get your show. So today, before we kick it off with our very special guest, let's go with our usual Patreon question of the day. And today we have, which daily task do you tend to procrastinate?
That's a good question.
That's a tough one.
Yeah, no, it's going to be a little easier than that, Hunter.
I know. I just looked at this one as well. It confused me.
Daily task that I tend to... Now, if Marcus isn't home, I procrastinate on making the bed. He makes the bed every morning as soon as I'm out of it.
Or while you're
I'd
still
make
sleeping.
It with her in it.
Or sometimes if I sleep late.
Freaking our admiral always said that, make your bed. I'd sit around and wait for her to get up. I'm going to look at her like, you're going to get out of the things for me.
But when he's not home, I feel like I still have to make it. Like he's somehow watching what I'm doing.
Judging, watching.
Yeah. So I will make it. I just tend to be later on in the day. I would say that that would be the thing that I procrastinate on.
I don't know, man.
I'm thinking too.
I was gonna say it's hit me right between my pretty brown eyes. I'm just like stumped right now.
I'm kind of far along in the game to where anything I did procrastinate on, I kind of got rid of.
I know.
Yeah, I'm in the same
boat. Same way, because I would say like going for a run or going to the gym, but
it has to be that.
I usually knock that out.
I do it anyways, but I will kind of, you know, the cold plunge.
If anything, that would be the one.
Yeah, when I have to stretch and when I got into getting the cold bath, I'll push that back.
We definitely depends on the weather too. When we go to stretch.
It always depends on the damn weather, man. Yeah, the stretching thing.
We complain on
the way. Which is the easiest thing to do. It's not like you're having to go back in the gym and lift steel, trying to get huge, anything like that. You're like, no. Walk your ass in there and sit down and stretch. It's the most wonderful thing on the planet, and I don't like to do it, and I can't figure that out. It is utterly baffling to me that I don't like to do that. What do you got?
I don't have anything, man. I'm really, if I'm up, I'm go mode. It's only thing. You know what? In the wintertime, I don't like starting my car. So, you know, going out to start the car, and then my wife takes the kids
stepping
to school.
Out cold.
So it's out there, the cold. You know, you still wake it up. So I would say that. Just going to start the car.
I know there's one I'm missing.
This might be something.
Somebody will say, I'm like, oh, I absolutely procrastinate on that.
I would say leaving the house, for us, that's a good one, because leaving the house, it takes a lot for us to just want to leave out of our driveway. We like to be here. So if
just
we have
watching
an errand,
the time go by.
Yeah,
if we have an errand to run or something, we're like, ugh, do we have to do it?
I mean, that Uber delivery might have been the worst thing for us.
Yeah. For sure.
Because if someone can just deliver my stuff, I won't leave this place. Mm-hmm. We've literally built a place here that I don't have to leave, and I don't want to, so it gets tough.
Yeah, everything delivers. All the shopping and groceries and even Amazon. Lowe's. Everything delivers out here, and we're in the country, so it's pretty much a dream world around here.
That's a good question.
Yeah. All right.
Mm-hmm. So let's get to it.
All right. All right, buddy. Finally got you in here.
Yeah, you do. I don't know if I should run now.
I was thinking about the time when you and I met for the first time. It was over a phone.
Correct.
You met my brother for the first time.
And how
so
I
just
him.
To give people an idea of what's going down right here, man, is my brother and you met, found you.
Yeah. Yes,
saw
he
you
did.
First.
Yes, he did.
And how many years has it been now?
Well.
Six, eight, ten?
Yeah, right around ten.
Ten, 12, right?
Give
something
or take.
Like that?
Yep.
And you're an artist. And you were in the Navy. You're married. And you got kids. And the main reason you're here is because you're an artist. That's how you came into my life.
Right.
I was looking for something. My brother haphazardly ran into you. Okay. That's the general story. So to back it up,
yeah.
Where are you from?
So originally from Queens, New York.
Okay.
And
born when?
1985.
So back in 1900s. Yeah. All right,
check. October 7th. And then raised in Queens. And you want me to just go right in?
I want to hear about, are you real Queens material? Like your parents are from there? Because I can hear it in your voice.
Really? I thought I lost it.
No.
Okay.
Do your parents have it real bad?
So my mom, like she came to visit even for the holiday and you could still hear it, you know, I would say. But yes, Queens Ridgewood, it's borderline Brooklyn, Queens. It's the
people from there know what you're talking about.
Yes.
People who don't.
Correct. It's in the five boroughs. It's not upstate. It's not Buffalo. Sometimes you hear people, oh, I'm from New York. And then you ask them, oh, where?
Okay, so when you live down here in the South, and people are like, I'm from New York, we automatically think you're from the city.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm talking down Manhattan, downtown. Everyone thinks that. No one has any idea that northern New York is beautiful. It's all wooded. It's West Point, that Buffalo. Buffalo's great, too. It's cold. Got a good
very
football
cold.
Team. Great football team this year, actually.
But you're from the city.
From the city. Mm-hmm. And that's really kind of how even the artwork kind of even came to play. You know, that kind of played out from being in New York, being raised, and then by my mom, no dad in the picture.
Period.
And
siblings?
Two sisters, Lisa and Cecilia. Growing up in Queens, it was rough. It wasn't like, oh, pretty Queens.
Single mom your whole life, kind of.
Yes. So, if you do watch this, I love you. You know, this is.
I will make sure we let her know that yes. too, bro. Yeah.
And it came to the point where being raised without the dad role prior to the going live, you know, I was telling your husband just about fatherhood and stuff, but not having that male role model, it led me in a different path. You know, my mom did her very best to raise me, but she was also trying to pay bills, take care of two other children.
When people say that, when guys say that, they're like, hey, I had a single mom. She could raise me. She did the best she could. But there's something about having a guy around.
Yes.
They don't even have to say anything. They're just going to be sitting there.
Correct.
Somebody you can look at. That's someone told me that. And at the very least, when I'm trying to be a father, at least I'm sitting there.
That's right.
And no guy likes to be a dad. I mean, we could bullshit all day and be like, hey, we get good at it.
It's a full-time job.
Yeah. Full-time job. In the beginning, there's no books. We're not ready for that or anything like that. So just the fact that you just show up is everything.
So I think from missing out on that structure, on that discipline, a role model, what to follow after, that being gone, it just was just a segue into the streets, you know, and then I wind up getting around the wrong crowd, trying to fit in. And then it would just, it went like.
What'd mom do?
She was, I would say she jumped around a few jobs from waitressing to administrative to.
Just trying to make it.
Just trying to survive. It wasn't living when we were younger. It was survival. Yeah.
And because of that, you were just moving schools and moving homes.
Yeah.
And
so even this past holiday, I was telling her I was going to be on the podcast, and she said, share the story. You know, and I was asking for permission because I'm not trying to paint my mom in a bad light.
You can't. Mothers are painted in an awesome light. That's why they're mothers.
That's right. And she said it. She's like, no, Anthony, share it. So I was in about more than 11 elementary schools. We moved around a lot. It was constant changing. And now that I'm older, I look back and that wasn't normal. Mm-hmm. And then that.
Oh, it's not. Most people don't even leave the town they grew up in, bro. Like 50-something percent of all human beings, I think, not just Americans. And then you got military brats who move around. And then you got somebody like you.
Moving around in the same area. Yeah.
So now you're grown. That's probably a benefit. Because look at how many people you got to meet, how you got to meet them. You learned at a young age. You know, most of the time that takes growing up.
Even just adjustment, making friends, and then them being ripped out of your life, and then just being the new person over and over and
that
over.
That sucks.
It did.
Being the new guy
it
all
did.
The time?
It did. And it played out. And then I would say even tied in the mix of that, then you throw in mom was heavy into alcohol. So as at a young age, you know, it wasn't normal for an 11-year-old to be holding his mother's hair. She would, you know, she's puking in a toilet bowl.
She had a good problem.
Yeah, she was a heavy hitter, you know. Right. And you know, then there would be these moments that a son was not supposed to share with their mother, their parent.
Hey, I truly believe that's a thing. there's some things that there's a separation between the mom and the son.
There was no boundaries, you know, and I think it's my mom was doing everything she could to cope. And like I said, it's really, it played out as much as she tried. It came to the point where I found acceptance in the street life. Young guys, you know, womanizing, player.
Fun.
But yeah, you know.
Fighting all the time out in the street. Yeah, I get it, man.
It got to the point where it was just doing things that a 14, 15-year-old probably shouldn't be doing or in environments shouldn't be at. And that played out and into, you know, the graffiti scene.
Is that how you started?
So that's how it really started, with the vandalism.
Yeah.
And painting on trains and running with the crews.
So let's talk about that for a second. Because the trains that pull through the town, every one of those cars is tagged. Mm-hmm. And some of them are exceptional.
Yeah, there's hit or miss, yeah.
You hit them in the yard, right?
So you hit them in the yard when no one's around, cognito, you know, we go in, to, you know.
Y'all right. I always wondered, is like, if you wanted to deliver a perfect, like, if I'd had to teach my kid, which I do, how to be a spy, a CIA, the okay. most covert operative ninja on the planet. I was like, if you want to pass a message covert, right on the side of a train and find out where that train's going in the other town, have your boys parked there waiting. Because sometimes, I mean, y'all can get pretty detailed with it.
Yes, it was our way. It was our social media back then, I guess, you know, to go viral or to be known. And so the graffiti was an outlet to express, to cope with certain things. It was just a way to, you know, escape reality of the pain, things that were happening. But
some people use it to mark territory, right?
That too. There's a lot of, as far as time's sake, there is a lot of that goes into it. But I was just fascinated by the art, right. The art set, you know.
How did you get a hold of all the paint and all of that at that age?
It was stolen.
Oh, you stole it. Yeah, yeah.
We would go in, you know, and they're not there. You know, this stereotype or a person behind the cashier that, you know, it was just this. You would have someone distract. You would have, sure, a scene.
That's the thing too. Most people overlook, especially shop owners.
Yes.
Who you have in there working? Like, if someone walks in, they're gonna have the first piece in the ID.
And then you sometimes have insiders, you know, and you could always hook them up offline with other stuff, trade offs, things of that nature.
But I never in a million years thought that anyone stole spray paint. That's how naive I am. I never thought that was a thing.
And it just came to a point where, like I said, it's from that, it just trajectory of the graffiti. It's
because you switched your art.
So I did switch
my canvas. Your canvas has changed.
So I did that later on. It got to the point where the graffiti went from that to running with people that were chasing after the wrong storm.
Yeah.
And
some of those graffiti artists are so good. They stay anonymous. Like, I kind of studied that a little bit. Some of your guys, like, they'll do a painting up on the side of a bridge that's impossible to get to, and it looks amazing. You don't even want to call it graffiti, actually.
Banksy.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Is that what his name is? Yeah. He's one of them.
Yeah, he's definitely up there. I would say I just did it more of just an outlook, you know, just to kind of, like I said, get away from what I was happening in the home front. And then it just kind of fast forward. It just wind up leading. It just opened the door to other avenues, other things that I wasn't anticipating being on that other side.
So did you, when you were in the moment of living that life, did you get caught by the police?
Yes, I actually wound up getting arrested one of the times. Actually, it was a taxi driver. It was a yellow cab. We're there spray painting, you know, the term's called bombing. And we're there, and a taxi car drove by. And we just kept going. And the next thing you know, it pulled up. With sirens. It was a yellow, like a New York cab, but that's how the undercovers, you know, they're
the
sneaky.
The cop was in a yellow
cab? It was two cops, undercover, but it did look weird when they drove by because they were both in the front seat.
Yeah, yeah. No one was in the back. Oh, how funny.
You look like it too. You know what I mean? Like, some of them got like, the cover part I get, but you guys just look like cops, so, man.
But yeah, no, I wound up getting actually arrested three times, and it was, and when you're in the back seat with those shiny cuffs on, you know, you start just...
Get some different kind of jewelry.
Correct. And it just got to a point where it was just regret. And
so you do feel bad?
So looking back, yes. But then at the same time, that's just who I was at that age. And then as I got older, I wound up taking it a little bit more serious and trying to use it to be lucrative.
Specifically, let's talk about the recruiter.
Oh, how I got into the Navy?
Because how he met the recruiter was at the same time
period. That's right. No, it's good that you reeled that back in, Melanie. So I was now 18 years old. I'm working two jobs. I'm doing construction, demolition at nighttime. And then during the morning shift, I'm doing Starbucks. And I'm leaving the city, and I'm just miserable, hating life, and just trying to figure out how I'm going to make the next, you know, mortgage or rent at that time. And then I'm in the train station. I'm walking. I got coffee stains on my shirt. And I see this recruiter back then, they're in their whites, and he comes over to me and he hands me a pencil. So at this time, I was like a vigilante rebel. So he gave me the pencil and I just chucked it. And then I walk away, you know, minding my own business. And he comes back up to me. It's no more a conversation. Now this is a problem in the New York state of mind.
Yeah, right, yeah.
And so I said to him, I was like, what's up? And he goes, you know why I gave you that pencil? And I was like, no clue. He said, you look like a sharp guy. And I said, well, you look like a liar, you know? And he was trying to sell the...
Like you sell used cars or something, man.
He was trying to sell the sizzle, man.
Especially in those whites.
So I told him straight up, I said, you know, I'm broke, busted, and disgusted. And, you know, I'm telling him, I said, you could have gave me $5. You gave me a pencil? And he's like, you ever thought about the Navy? You ever thought about the military? And by the way, this on your show, this is the first time I'm coming out publicly that I was in the Navy. I never ever told anybody. I never went... On really? Social media, yeah, I've never shared that. Never. I've gotten,
I thought that was the coolest part.
Well, it's gonna be.
How you remember? We're getting into that, but
yeah. But to put the cork on the bottle on that, it when he gave me the pencil, I just remember I chucked it, and then the next thing I know, in a few months, I'm you know raising my hand.
That shit
I'm,
worked.
And it,
well, he, same dude.
And you know what? It's crazy because deep down inside, I knew I needed something like that. And I could say this publicly, joining the military, joining the Navy, hands down one of the best decisions.
That's like some Belfort. Hey, sell me this pen. Remember that from Wolf of Wall Street? Yeah, that guy?
Yeah.
How did he do it? He goes like, freaking, he dropped a pencil on the Navy.
And his name was Petty Officer Shepard. Shep, I called him.
Still know him?
I've seen him. He's now, I think he went Mustang, so he's officer now. But I have lost contact. But, no, and the recruiters, they got to do their job, but he was legit.
How about them guys? Those guys can get you, anybody, any man that can sell you into the military has got a gift.
That's right. That's right.
Mine got me. He was a SEAL. Bo Walsh, still know him. I mean, he had me from the get-go. But some of those guys are great at selling it. Some of them aren't. Some make you run away from it.
Right.
What did he tell you you could do in the military?
Another great question. So originally I was going to go in as aviation parking jets, and I was thinking that, and I didn't have the highest ASVAB score, so it was limited, and I wind up getting into trouble. So originally I was going to go in as an aviation, I believe it was some type of a boatswain handler possibly. I don't remember.
Like an ordnanceman?
No, not that. It was aviation. It'll come to me. But I wound up just getting into trouble at the Starbucks. Lost my cool. And I just remember calling my recruiter. I called him, I'm bleeding. I was like, hey, I just quit my Starbucks job. I need to go into the Navy now. You know,
he's right
like,
now.
And he was like, nah, it ain't happening like that. You're supposed to go in at a certain time frame. So we wound up speeding it, like fast forwarding. The only way to get in ASAP was going undesignated.
Oh, that's what he sold you on?
No. Here comes the frying pan, whopping, where I wound up meeting with another recruiter, and it was closer to my city, and he was like, man, go undesignated. You go there into the fleet. You just tell your chief, hey, you want to work with this department for that day. And definitely that's not how it works.
But no.
Let me tell you, when I got to my first command, I'm all, you know, gung-ho, I'm undesignated. And when I say it looked like I was in a group of people that were doing community service. There wasn't a smile.
Them freaking guys looked like they're miserable, man.
No, it was a group of hooligans. Everybody, you know, the guy next to me at ranks or quarters, you know, he burped and I got hung over. I was just, it was to the point where I was like, what am I doing?
Yeah,
like,
how'd you get here? I lost a bet. that guy.
Yeah, I was supposed to go to jail, but the judge let me go. And I tried, and it was, you know what? And it's not the worst. It is tough. And I wound up getting lucky, but I wound up getting striking out eventually. I went engineer. And before how I got into the engineer, I wound up going to Iraq. So I did a deployment in Iraq. This is when
right out of camp?
No. I would say second year in.
Oh, check.
They were gonna go a deployment, but I wound up volunteering for IA. At the time, it was called Individual Augmentee.
Oh, yeah. And
I wound up doing, I went to Camp Buka to do detainee operations. And that
as
was
undesignated?
As undesignated. And that was really rewarding. It was patriotic on a whole nother level. The camaraderie, seeing the army. Yeah. This is right when they were talking about going purple. This was like in that merger of branches.
I remember.
So, but after that, came back to the fleet, wanted to get, you know, capped or advanced quickly.
Like, were you at the creek or you in?
No, I was at that time, I was at Naval Station Norfolk. I was on the USS Iwo Jima, LHD-7.
On Iwo?
And then from there, got orders to EXW, the Expeditionary Warfare Community. It was like junior varsity, SWIC, SEALs, with like a bunch of wannabes trying to, you know, drive boats. Just, yeah, it's a small community. It's a group. And I wound up doing that, which was fun. Did two deployments with them. And then I cross-rated out or transitioned to a special programs. It was called Navy Drug and Alcohol Counselor. And in Portsmouth.
That's just the Navy program as it is, that, bro. Hey,
it don't get any Navier than that.
Yeah,
right?
That's what we do, man.
And that's so at Portsmouth Hospital, at this time, I'm an E5 now. And anyone that knows me knows I have a great admiration for SEALs, the Trident, Buds. I'm just, who doesn't? But at my command, I was getting ready to go back into the fleet. But we had like a quarters, and one of the petty officers, the LPO, leading petty officer, she was like, hey, Latrell. Morgan was medevaced to Portsmouth. So when she said it, I was like, Morgan, no, Marcus. And she's like, no, it's his brother. And my first thing, I was like, is he okay? I wanted, you know, do I go bring him a cake or, you know, something? here's an apple pie. You know, what can I show support? And there was multiple floors in the Portsmouth Hospital. It's a big hospital. And I wind up on one of the quarterdeck watches. I wind up seeing this giant. He's walking down the hallway, civvies, his jeans, cowboy boots. I was telling Hunter on the way here, he's wearing a Texas Rangers hat, shaggy, but he had this walk. And I remember seeing him, and I was like, this is Marcus's brother. This is
Morgan. You're missing.
And literally, I go up to him, you know, like, hey, mister, you know, and when he stared at me, he stared into my soul.
He does that.
He had this look, like in the military in boot camp, they call it like a 1,000-yard stare, but I just remember him like sizing me up without even moving his eyeballs, and I was like, I just want to do a painting for your brother.
He goes, this is walking out of the hospital.
This is him walking out of the hospital. I'm at a quarter day.
He called me right after this. This is how we met.
No way.
Yeah, this is how we met.
I'm at a podium, and I seen your brother. And like I said, he just stood out, and he was walking, staying in his lane, mind his own business. But he was just, and I just went up to him. I was like, hey. And I told him, I was, you know, and he's like, what's up, dude? I'm like, what? And I told him, I was like, look, I don't want no motive. I just want to do a painting for your brother. And I said, how can I get in contact with you? He gave me an email. Yeah. After like he questioned me, sized me up with multiple questions, and he gave me an email. And then that was it. And then I was hoping to hear from him. I sent him an email. I wound up seeing him again. I ran up to him like some crazy ex-girlfriend.
Hey!
That's what he said. So, you know, because he's mean.
He is.
He's mean when he was in. Yeah. I mean, he's mean. He's a congressman now, so he's double now. But he called me up and was like, oh, damn.
Some guy wants to give me a painting, some fangirl.
He goes, I normally wouldn't do this, but this son of a gun went out of his way.
And I did. I remember just cranking it out. And I
that's what he said. He's like, your enthusiasm? He stopped him right there at the doors, right?
Yeah, literally. But I just remember him looking down at me. But he was just, like I said, I've had people stare at me, but this was just like, all right, they just went on myself.
Yeah.
You know?
He's always, a helicopter crash messed him up pretty bad. And he's, you know, he's always in pain. So he's always pissed.
And I wound up seeing him again. I told him, I said, I have the painting. He's like, go get it. And I came back. And when I started explaining, when I started explaining the painting, he's like, come here, man, sit down. And when I went over certain things I wanted to incorporate about the story, you know, the deployment, everything that took place. And he was just, he said, thank you. He's like, I promise you, I'm going to do this to your brother. And then shortly after that, we called, we spoke. Originally, I was hoping to get like a seal coin from you or something like that. I was like, maybe I get a coin from him. But really, even if I didn't, I just had the honor of knowing that I did it for you, the painting. And from there, it just took flight. I stayed in contact. He's like, take my number. And I've called your brother on multiple occasions just to talk, to bro it out, advice, mentorship.
So talk about your art. It went from, like, how do you paint now? Because it went from graffiti, it's evolved.
So it went from, that's right, it definitely evolved. It went from graffiti to, you know, making it to its a piece that actually shares like a story.
Because we talked about that. When you called, I was like, I want to do something for you. I was like, well, this is the idea I got. I was like, I want some codes and some keys and little hidden stuff inside those paintings.
So I took that and I ran with it to the end zone. And I've been doing that
since. Your art's all over my walls.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no. You understand, I watch the podcast. I've seen social media. I have not. But every time I see, I'm like, man, I did that for them. I never would have thought, you know, that this would have been displayed in your studio and the podcast. That's really, I'm honored. I really am.
All right, so go ahead. I mean,
yeah, sure. No, it's great. So I wind up, after doing that painting for you, it just...
Yeah, so the one that we came up with was there's multiple paintings. When they're put together, they complete the puzzle.
They complete a puzzle.
Auction them off separately and then tell anybody that the freaking puzzles are in there.
No,
so later on, people will come back and collect them.
Yeah, they're going
to
be...
I had a brilliant idea to make you a famous artist, bro. I've been working on it nonstop. I'm glad you never gave up on it.
So with this one, this is the one that we're going to be giving away that Marcus agreed to sign. But most people, if you would look at the painting, you probably wouldn't see everything off the rip. Hunter, let me know if I need to move left or right.
It's good.
Okay, so... So when you see this painting, just in a few seconds, what do you see, Marcus?
My eagle, the T&Q, and then the helicopters in the background with the body operator.
So
angle it right a little bit.
So what most people wouldn't see right away is not only you'll see the two helicopters, but this is episode 352. So I put that in the top left corner. And then behind the microphone, the podcast microphone, you'll see it's actually an operator, the silhouette, holding an M4, and behind his right shoulder is the Trident wing.
Oh, I see that, yeah.
And then it goes off to the side, and it has on the side, I wrote, the execution of my duties will be swift and violent. It's from the Navy SEAL ethos. Yep. And then I put Team T&Q at the top in the old English font, and in a baby blue font, I wrote, you would have to really zoom in on it, but it says Mojo, and at the top, where I put Phasm Gallery on the S, I wrote Southern Boy and your Buzz Class, which is 228. So there's things that many people probably want to see. And the thing that's, it's many layers in the painting. And I've heard you say this on the podcast, but buckle up, buttercup. So that's below the Team Never Quit.
Great phrase around here.
So it's, and in all the paintings, there's multiple signs, quotes. On. Sometimes I'll put scripture, just what I'm, you know, if I'm in the studio painting and if I know someone's personally going through something. So it's interesting, but I think the paintings that I do will describe identity, a story, and express someone's life.
Sure. So Shia LaBeouf taught me that art is anything that moves you. When he said that, I was like, that's about right. And then the greatest part about it is the ones that are, there are meanings behind some things that you don't even know. They mean something personal to you, and then they're professional. She brought in some art yesterday. And she said the name of it and was handing me, and I was looking at it. And then she had another piece in her hand, and the name fit that. So, I mean, yeah, art is truly in the eye of the beholder.
So do you do that with all of your pieces? Do you have the hidden codes?
Every single one. Now, sometimes a client will request, I want this.
Yeah. So we did that for the kids. They don't even know it. That was the cool part. Is like when the parent calls up, when you start doing that, I was like, "Hey, put this in there for these suckers."
Yeah.
So later on, when they see it,
and then even for the one I did for Mark Wahlberg, with his, I remember I wrote Wahlberg. I believe I put his boys' names. I believe I had two sons. I believe I could be mistaken. I put his kids' names. There were certain words that you wanted that I put in there. And they're sure if I looked at the painting, I probably, you know, this was years ago. Hmm. But it's true. It's and I've when I do show somebody the painting, they're like, I see it now.
So what Dwayne got was of him and Moana.
Yes, the one I did for The Rock.
I mean, that's got it was first daughter.
Yes, that's what it was daughter. Yeah. Yes.
I mean, that's got to be cool having a painting of your dad who was in a freaking cartoon, right? When you get older.
So anyone that's listening, it is true. I have friends that mock me and joke me. They're like, nah, you're just doing that. I'm like, no, I've done these paintings for these people. I'm telling you.
Yeah.
We'll be right back.
you want to talk about that painting behind you?
Sure, sure. So for this one, obviously, I know that the Charles are very passionate people about Texas. So what I wind up doing is I took the, instead of the star, I put the bone frog. And then you'll see at the bottom right, as Hunter's going to zoom in on the bottom right of the Texas flag, I put the great state. You'll see multiple times at the top right, Texas. And then Walking in Memphis was Marcus's song that I believe he really enjoys. And at the bottom, I put that date, the November 27th. I believe
it's our anniversary.
Correct. Mm-hmm. And then you have the ATM, the college state.
Texas A&M, baby.
And then I just know Marcus is a family man of faith. So I wound up putting the scripture, Proverbs.
That's the best thing you could have pulled there to get me out of trouble. Proverbs. She has to stare at that every time she walks in here, and she's, you know, I do too.
Like, the Proverbs 18:22, the scripture, he who finds a wife finds good and receives favor from the Lord. And at the top, I put all the kids' names.
You got, and 8:22.
Proverbs 18:22.
Is my bud's class backwards.
Yeah, 2:28.
No way.
Yeah. Oh,
I knew that.
I know you did.
I did on purpose. Yeah. But and then you'll see the top right, the team never quit. I did multiple things. I from the Navy SEAL ethos, there's possibly in there, I don't remember what it was exactly, but just everything that I do, there's just a lot of messages.
Like layering.
Multiple mm-hmm. layers and thing that's meaningful.
What's that type of art called?
You know what? Someone asked me that yesterday.
And did I name yet?
And I could have, you know, Googled it.
Will you layer that to where it comes up like that?
And it's, like I said, it's every piece that I do, it's the only one made. It's original piece, one of a kind. And on the first one that I actually did for you, it was just very sentimental. I remember I put Daisy. I put things that were just, I knew that mm-hmm. were very important to you. I remember even incorporating the mountain. You know, we're not going in too deep on it, but I just remember, like, and I could later on after the podcast.
My Spider-Man one's upstairs in my kids' room. The Hulk one's in the hallway. And then
the other one that we were talking about, the Marvel.
The collage. America.
Oh, that one?
Let the me collage tell you. One. It has everybody in it.
Let me tell you, that one.
It's patched up.
Yeah, that one.
It's next to the Hulk in the hallway. Yeah.
That one's good because we put the glass in there. And it stands.
Oh, the piece of broken glass. Yeah, I literally broke glass and mirror, and I glued
stuck
it
in there.
That actually may be one of my favorite pieces
of
art.
It's badass. It's great.
It's so cool.
It is. It's still cool to this very day.
Mm-hmm. So, about your story, though, like getting into the art, you went through some trials in the Navy with your own alcohol addictions and that kind of stuff. Do you want to touch on that and like how you actually took your passion as a rebel kid on doing graffiti on the streets to the whole reason you embraced that and started doing it on canvas is because you were going through an evolution?
So joining the military, hands down, one of the best decisions. Being raised in the broken home, looking for that structure, looking for that stability. Join the service. I have a little bit of it, but it's still not. There's a desire that wasn't fulfilled. Start partying, became my own best, worst version of me. Then kind of got stabled or things kind of smoothing out when I had a friend of mine, his name's Ernie, and he wound up actually witnessing to me. And tell him, because 6 months into my marriage, my wife was going to divorce me. It was, if I was on fire, I didn't deserve to get spat at. Like, I was just a hot mess. And I didn't want to be another statistic deep down inside. I didn't want to be, everybody was getting married and getting divorced where they changed their underwear in the Navy. And I just didn't want that. And I just.
You grew up with it, right?
Yes. Everybody in my family was either hooked on something, just in and out of relationships. I joined the military to better myself. Most people do. You know, they want out. They want to do good. And
that's the place to go.
And when I tell you this man, he was just a friend. He wasn't over the top. He didn't, you know, point out all my flaws. He was there for me, him and his wife. And I seen that. I wanted that. So I wound up getting saved. I became a born-again Christian. And it wasn't like, you know, I called my wife and the next day we're running in the field to each other. You know, it was still drama. And I was having to, you know, try to start hit that reset button. But after I started behaving, I realized that, you know, with my artwork, I could probably maybe even take this serious and maybe make it a business. And I would doodle and doodle in the MWR. It was a military welfare center.
Is that what that
I believe that's
that
yeah,
for, right?
Military, recreation.
Welfare and readiness. Or
something like that. And it's
We
and
should
it's,
know that. I feel
yeah,
like
Yeah, shame
know
on
that.
Us. And I wind up,
so I would draw and doodle in there in a black book that I have. And when I say I maybe even eventually will sell the book, just give it away or something like that. But I would do drawings, but people would stop by and they would be fascinated by the pieces that I was doing. I was requested to do tattoos, and I started realizing like
this. You don't do ink though, right?
No, nothing like that. And I saw that there was money in it, and the Navy was providing me already a job. And on the downtime, now that I'm no longer drinking, I'm no longer doing the madness, I had more time on my hands, and I started doing the drawings. And then from that, after your brother, I felt like really Morgan believed in me.
He does that. Like, he is probably one of the scariest dudes walking around, and he'll tell you every problem about you, but if he believes in you, then he won't let you go.
Yeah, you and your brother, you're both very...
We get real attached. It's
weird. You're very big.
I don't know why we do that, but we do.
You're tall men, but I believe Morgan's heart is bigger than his body. And I mean it, and like when I said, it was very sincere, it was organic the way it happened, and then I really owe a lot of my success to you and your brother. You know, really.
It's all your hard work, bro.
At what point, though, did you find out that your sons had a disability? And
yes, so after, like I said, after, you know, the salvation came into play, marriage is back on track, and then the artwork is kind of taking flight from the people I already mentioned before, and then the wife and I, we decide to have a child. We didn't find out right away about Anthony, Jace, my oldest son, but he was a boy. We thought maybe it was going to be a little bit of a disability too far as maybe to respond. And I remember it like it was like yesterday, but in the hospital, I'm going to try not to get choked up on your podcast. But I remember in the hospital, he's over 2 years old and they're doing all these studies. So I'm like, I'm looking at my son go through this. I'm watching my wife suffer emotionally. But I remember they found out that they tell me and my wife after all these testing that like the final one that he's got like severe hearing loss, you know, or profound hearing loss. So now I'm still fighting this. You know, I never heard my father say I love you. My heartbeat, my cadence is I just want my son to hear his dad say I love you. So the doctor tells me that your son won't be able to hear. And I remember. And so I told the doctor, I said, you're telling me my son's deaf? And then, you know, the nurse, they're quietly, you know, they're trying to be diplomatic about it.
Yeah, yeah.
And I just remember just, it was like, my heart was crushed, but it was out, there was so much happening. I'm watching my wife just, you know, process this all. And I just remember, I just stood quiet. And I'm a pretty optimistic person and outgoing, but it was like life just got sucked and ripped out. And I remember we walked back to the car, and when we sat in the car, my wife just shattered. And it just got to a point where, as a father, as a man, you're trying to do so much. And money, it matters, but it's not everything. So to make a long story longer, it was a Team Never Quit moment for me, where at that point, it was so easy because hope, faith, everything went out the window. I remember just driving and I'm questioning myself, my, and I'm like, why me? Why my wife? Why my son? And it was brutal. It was dark. And we didn't give up. And thank God for a good friendships with people in the church, having a good circle. I called your brother. I remember even you guys one time, like saying, hey, we're praying for you, you know, and it was just, it wasn't just embracing life. It was just, I can't really explain it. The hardest part, I think, was even releasing my son for the surgery. You know, there's many people that have children that are born with different things, you know. So it was, thank God for the military. They performed the surgery. But I just remember giving my son away, and he's under the amnesia. So he's like half asleep. So you're seeing your child in a form that it's like, this is not him. And it was really dark. And I just remember the surgery went well, but then us getting our son back, he had these stitches on his head everywhere. He had blood because they put magnets pretty much. It's like on his skull, and the cochlear implants go on. It sends sound waves. It's very intricate, but he hears, you know, he hears me say I love you all the time, and it's really a miracle. And I would say,
what does his face look like when he's
Well, Anthony Jace, he's a trooper, you know. And what's I guess what's really crazy is like no one on my wife's side or no one on my side of the family had hearing loss, and then and we, you know, you go through all that in life. It's like, man, you know, okay. So now on our second child, Samuel Carter, where everything's good, we wind up going. You know, they do like the after testings, but the nurse rolls Samuel back in. And she's like, all the tests came back good besides, but he didn't, the hearing. So she doesn't know that we have one child, but I just remember my wife just sinking in the, you know, the hospital chair, you know, the bed that the women lay on, and they got the blanket on them. And it was so crazy, but I had to relive that. We both did, and you don't realize it, but stuff like that.
Same exact issue?
Same. And you know.
So both kids were born without hearing.
Correct. And when I say, there was an age gap, but you don't realize that it does so much to a marriage. To you know, you start isolating yourself, you start judging yourself, you become your own worst enemy. But my wife, thank God, she was grounded. Her faith, again, it goes back to the circle of friends that we had. My pastor, he was a vital part far as just keeping things glued together. Just the encouragement, and it wasn't fluff. It wasn't someone just being nice. They genuinely were there, and you know, just through prayer and just the support, our family, my mom, my mother-in-law, they're amazing people, my heroes. But so both of my kids have the cochlear implants, and forgive me for getting all. I held back, man. There should be like a tidal wave over here. I can't believe But it just came to a point where I guess my Team Never Quit moment was just. You know, we never played victim. I never looked down at my kids. They have the hearing loss, or they, you know, I say temporarily hearing loss, but when they got their cochlear implants,
they hear now.
They hear, yeah. They, you know, they're running around. They're playing sports. Samuel, they got friends in my church. They call him.
Like, oh, great, he can hear now.
Yeah, right, great, right? Yeah.
Now you got him. Like, oh, wait a minute.
there's times I wish I had cochlear implants. Well, I'm like, right now I don't want to hear this.
Yeah, I should have rethought that.
No, but it's really beautiful that. You know, it's like I said, thank God for technology. And even if there wasn't, and we, you know, and we're learning sign and stuff like that, it was something that I'm just grateful to be a father, and not just a title. Like I'm really grateful to be in their lives, both of their lives. And I it's very humbling to be a dad. But I, like I said, it was brutal to not hear or to not
be heard.
Correct. And yeah. You know, like I said, there's so many other things, but. But that was.
Did it affect their speech?
So they now Anthony, he's 9 and he's gone to programs at ODU and it's Old Dominion, this college. They had campuses to facilitate that. It was all very new to us, and now he's in a school where they're doing both, and you know they go to multiple appointments. So as the kids get older, their hearing will be superb, and you could tell a little bit. You know, there's sometimes you could certain words you cannot pronounce, but I would say
I'll fix that.
So as they put, yes,
they'll fix that.
They are able to talk.
Yes, and they hear, and it's very. There are things that you know, waking the kids up in the morning. We sometimes stomp, shake the bed, touch every night. I'll pray over the kids. I you know, they're very with their senses, and we make light of it, but I'm like they're like my little X-Men.
Sure, they're like little. All the others got to be hype.
So
and these young kids, man, they're different. Yeah. They're not like us, man. They got special gifts, hand-eye coordination, everything.
But I didn't mean to go off on a tangent.
No, it's a special part of your story and your testimony of, and that like that the art has become your outlet.
Like all of us get a hand dealt.
Yes, Marcus.
There's this thing. It's like, hey, man, when you know, Jesus always said. Get your cross, pick it up, and carry it. So, like, when you get it tacked on you, it can crush you. You can be that person when everyone looks at you, like, yeah, I know why he acts that way because he got dealt. No, you can pick it up and be positive in everything that you do, and you do that. That's an example. That's why we're sitting in this room together.
Right. Outlook, I mean, perspective.
You're out there scratching some stuff on the side of a train to we're doing this now, and we're still going. We're just getting started.
That's right, and like I said, it's
confidence has to build in you.
It's incredible, and then even like you know we go places and we do sometimes get people stare, you know sometimes that inner New York. I'm like, what are you looking at? What are you staring at? But there's now I realize that it's a fascination where people are very marveled by it,
And it's a good conversation starter. Well, I'll tell somebody, oh, they're cochlear implants. What are you looking at? You know, I'm not ugly about it. Mm-hmm. I try to, you know, have favor where I go or be polite to people. But they have it. They hear. And it's cool because there's times where my son, like if mom is cleaning your room, he'll be like, Dad, can I take them off? I'm like, keep them on.
Oh, my gosh.
So when he's older.
So their exterior, you can see them?
Yes. You'll see both of them on their heads, on the back of their skulls. Yeah.
And that technology progresses all the time.
And who knows? Years from now, they may be as small as... Yeah. Right.
Won't even be able to see it.
So now they're...
You know that's coming.
Right. And they're smaller, so the smaller heads, so it looks kind of large, but as they get older...
Okay, so I'm a firm believer in this now that we have kids. It's like some of that stuff that our kids get put on them is on purpose by the good Lord, so they'll stay humble.
Mm-hmm. That's true, and they're both good-looking kids.
I was just about to say, they're probably beautiful.
They really are.
So my kids are like, hey, I got this. I'm like, you're freaking beautiful, okay? Nothing's wrong with you except for that little thing. Suck it up till you become a teenager. Uh-huh. And then you grow out of that.
It's crazy what kids will pick out about themselves. I mean, I honestly just cannot think of anything wrong with our children physically. Notice, like, but they will pick out one little freckle or... Addie complains that she has hair on her legs. I said, everybody has hair on their legs. When you get to a certain age, you get to shave it.
Yeah. And you know, obviously the audience that follows this page, a lot of military, a lot of people from different ages, different states, everywhere. But like you said, Marcus, everybody goes through something. Everybody has, you know, that in front of them, like, now what? Mm-hmm. That uncertainty. And I like I said, I'm just very grateful. I probably would say what got us through the most is it wasn't the prayers that we were saying. It was like the prayers that were in the reservoir that we were able to pull from prior to that. So, and we got through. And like I said, there were things, though, that it was just a lot of mental fog that just why? What? But we didn't give up. And
have you ever read the backstory of any famous artist? It sounds just like the one you just described. Like, you can't be a famous artist and everything be fine.
Right.
Like, when I look into your family and I look into your art, it needs to kind of coalesce. Mm-hmm. So when you sit up here and you're telling us everything goes, yeah, man, artists do that.
Yeah, that's how art is created, is out of...
chaos in life, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, and now it's interesting. So I'll be painting sometimes, and Anthony's fascinated by it.
I was going to say, is he getting into it?
And he likes it, and I'll tell him, hey, this is what you do. You want to splat? And I do a lot of stencil art, too, you know, just to... for speed and process, and he loves it, and it's just even talking about it, I'm just
like, what about Samuel? What's he into?
Samuel Carter, I've said it earlier, but so his nickname in the church is the Tank, you know, because he's like a little man, he's 2 foot, you know, a little baby, little 2-year-old, but just tough as nails, and he hasn't been much of a painter. He's been more of a throwing cars.
A destroyer.
Yeah. But it's just tough as nails. And it's very interesting. But, you know, I guess everyone wants... you want a healthy child, a healthy baby. Everyone's desire. But even now, seeing Anthony help his little brother with the ears. And, like, they like, ready? You and your brother. You guys have a bond that's unbreakable. For whatever.
My brother?
Yes.
We do, absolutely. You're damn right.
You know, and it's just...
forged in adversity.
So it's to the point where, yeah, my kids don't have a trident together, right? On that you know, but it's... they have their bond between the ear, like with the cochlear implants, mm-hmm. that I believe is unbreakable. And I think it's... for me, it's... I think that's like, okay, you know what? Yeah, like you said, it's...
they can understand each other.
For them to go through that together?
Yes. So that's what I mean. It's not alone. You're not doing mm-hmm. this alone. It's no better feeling than having a battle buddy, a swim buddy.
Suffering there with somebody else. So then you're not suffering. They are. Mm-hmm.
And then today's world we live in, you know, you got, you know, it's different. Bullies in the 90s, you would punch in the arm. Now it's, you know, it's so... but yeah.
I mean, some of those older brothers, you would see them, they would wear those just so their younger brother wouldn't feel embarrassed.
Right. So
people shave their heads.
Yes.
People freaking do... all kinds of stuff to make other people feel better about themselves. That's true goodness.
Yeah, I'm very grateful to be on the podcast and to share bits and pieces of my story. And like I said, that was a highlight, just besides getting free from addictions, getting free from just being lost and confused. And now, you know, being a father, like I said, this May will make 17 years being married to my beautiful wife. And she's really, you know, I asked a friend of mine, was like doing like a little
mock interview with me yesterday. He was like, "Who's your hero?" And I was like, "Oh, snap!" You know. And then and I was like, "My wife." And then I also said, you know, her mother, Judy. They have the same name. But when I say her mom's been an angel, just from being an ear to listen, you know, when I'm going through stuff, just very gentle. Their whole family, but just I'm sitting across from you guys, but I'm just so humbled to be here. I'm very grateful. And just even to share my story, I'm just like, I don't take this lightly, you know. I'm just very honored to be here and to share this.
Well, we appreciate you coming out, and we're excited to help kind of spread the awareness about your art. So one of the things that we talked about doing was taking this piece of art that you did and doing a giveaway on our social media. And so we're going to do, on all of our social media platforms, we're going to do a giveaway. And you already described what's on it, but we also talked about doing prints of it and selling that on our website. But if somebody wants to have their own commissioned art, how do they get a hold of you?
They just send me a direct message through the Instagram, the THASM Gallery, Dasm Gallery. And, you know, I'm very fair on the prices.
Yeah.
You know, I just do this, you know, because I love it.
So what's THASM stand for?
So, quick story. Originally, I was writing SM. It was short. And the don't joke me too much on this, but the original SM, it stood for Sexy Mafia.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, my gosh. This is, you're going to go viral, you know, but.
Totally something from Queens.
Yeah, typical New York, but that was the original name. You know, in high school, you get a nickname, and that
was that? Sexy Mafia.
Sexy right there, Mafia. And then my friends, like, they're like, "I'm not calling you that, bro." I'm like, "Dude, Sexy Mafia." They're like, "No, I'm not.
Call me that."
Yeah. And then.
That sounds like a New York time. "Bro, I can't call you that, man. I just can't do it."
And then the next day I know.
"I call you a lot of things. I can't call you that. You know what I mean?"
And the next day I know, Mark, is one of my buddies like, "Hey, just SM." And I was like, "It sticks." And then in graffiti, you put your tag, and then you put like a crew, or like, let's say when you sign something, you put your name and your buds class.
Yeah.
So it's like the crew you're with. So the crew that I had was THA. It's the highest around, and whether it's flashy, cool guy, whatever. And I just wound up merging the two, and I said THASM, and they're like, "Man, that's cool." And I stuck with it. And then as I got older, when I was trying to be professional, you can't tell someone, you know, "Hey, buy this expensive painting. I do graffiti." People are like, "Grab your purse, you know, get the kids." And so I wanted to, you know, clean it up a bit. So I added the word gallery, and I made it THASM Gallery. And people love it. And so that's it. THASM doesn't, you know.
Do you have a friend named Vinny?
I do have a friend named Vincent, and he's a close friend of mine, but sometimes I'll call him Vinny.
I don't have a Vinny in my crew. I really want one, too, especially from New York. You know what I'm talking about?
My cousin Vinny?
Yeah. I feel like I don't have one, dude.
You could do, if you get a Vinny, you could also do Vincenzo, Venus.
Yeah, I don't have a Vinny. I don't have I need a good, like an Abner, you know, something real abstract. I don't have either of those in my crew.
So have you stayed in touch with or gotten back in touch with any of the guys that you used to do graffiti with and get in trouble with?
You know what? So it's a great question too. Most of my friends, unfortunately, they're either in jail, bunch of baby mama drama, on the run, or not alive. And it was just the life that they chose to, you know, pursue. And like I said, I got lucky joining the service. And there, I would say one specific friend, his name is Santo Lombardo. He's my best friend to this day. We would go paint walls, run away from the cops, you know, chase girls. You know, now he's married. He's got an amazing wife, two sons, and we still stay in touch. But that's, I would say, he's probably the only one out of so many artists. But no.
It's funny to watch those guys who walked on the edge for so long when we become fathers. And our kids start to do that stuff. You're like, "God, what's the matter with you? Where'd you get that? Why do you act like that?" You're
like, "How are you like this?
Wait till they hear what we did." So,
does it make you look back and think like, "Oh, I could have ended up like him"?
There's been many, I call them heart checks, like or a pulse check. Many times where someone texts me, "So and so died," "So and so overdosed," "So and so committed suicide," where it's, you know, that I'm telling you right now, I'm able to sit in front of you somewhat cleaned up, but I was a hot mess years ago. Like,
I feel like all of us have to go through something like that. It's like a rite of passage.
Well, and it just proves, like y'all said earlier, that the military does serve a really awesome purpose to our youth that don't really have a dad figure. Like, the military is a dad figure to so many young men and women that just feel a little lost. And even if it's just 4 years,
yeah,
just gives you a little bit of foundation that and structure that you need.
And safety that, blanket,
yeah,
food, water, shelter, and they pay you, and you know you can at least do it for 4 years up to 20.
Anybody that's even like that's subscribed to your page, no matter what age you are, but join the service whether you need it or you want to serve your country. It's incredible.
Yeah, there's no downside to
it. Yeah, and every branch has their pros and cons.
Sure.
You know, like I said, I joined the Navy, and it was amazing to me and my family. I'm so grateful, and over the years I've collected like coins. I have like a few in my house, and I'm just like they're reference points. But I love it. And you're right. It created not only a structure. It created habit. It gave me
like a routine.
A routine. That's mm-hmm. it. Great word.
It teaches you what works in America. Because when you come out, if you're like, how do I make money? We'll show you that.
Well, and it helps. I mean, you never suspect that your kids are going to have a disability where they're going to need surgeries and all of that, which can be so expensive in the civilian world.
Oh, yes. But you're right.
The military helps pay for that.
Yes.
And I mean, it's a blessing all the way around. Well, thank you for coming on our show. We appreciate you.
Thank you both. Thank you all, Hunter. Big shout out to you as well.
Say your tag again, your social media.
My Instagram handle is Thasm Gallery, THASMGALLERY, Thasm Gallery, no spaces, no underscores. Marcus, thank you so much. Melanie, a million thanks. And anybody that buys a painting,
I'm sure we'll have a couple that'll.
I was gonna say, I'll do everything I can to make sure it's special.
Everybody wonder where I get my art. This is my artist. Yes. All right. So well done, brother. Good job.
Thank you.
Yeah, appreciate you coming down here, and thank you everybody for listening. Don't forget to go check out his page. He really does have the best art. We literally have his stuff scattered all around our walls. It's so cool. And with that being said, we'll see you guys next week.